You're listening to the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, here's Pastor Sandy as he teaches through the book of Ecclesiastes, chapters 1 through 4.
There's motion in life, but there's no meaning to life. Mankind is trapped in this monotonous rut called life. Generations come and go. The actors are always changing, but the stage and the script and the storyline remain the same. You know, you sense this when you go to Europe. If you've ever had the opportunity to go to Europe, you really sense this. You know, American houses are at most 100 years old. You find some of those up north, down south here. They were all burned to the ground by Sherman. But occasionally you'll find an older house. And you go to that house, you can appreciate it. Maybe one, two, maybe three generations have lived in that house. But when you go to Europe, the buildings there, some of them are 1,000 years old. And you realize that generation after generation after generation have lived in these homes. The individual person is constantly reminded that he's just one of a succession, a whole train of people that have been here and lived and died and passed on. You come to the conclusion that we're just all drips in the sea of humanity. And this is why people long for something new and for something novel. For when we come up with something we think is new, it makes us feel special. It distinguishes us from other generations. He says in verse 8, all things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. You see, our world loves to latch on to the latest fad or the latest fashion because it's our way of trying to beat back life's monotony. We say, oh, this is new. Wow, this has never been. That makes us somehow special. Solomon confesses, though, in verse 10, is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. You know, when you get excited about a new song you hear or a new invention or a new gadget or a new style or a new thought or a new cause, just remember that there have been new innovations before. And usually it's the same stuff recycled over and over. You know, I'm reminded of this whenever one of my kids sports a fad or a fashion that was popular when I was young. Oh, Dad, skateboarding is so cool. We used to skateboard down that hill when I was 10 years old, you know. Just hang on to your old clothes long enough and they'll eventually be back in style. Old fashion becomes vintage. The Greek philosopher Marcus Aurelius wrote, they that come after us will see nothing new. They who went before us saw nothing more than we have seen. Here's another way of putting it. The ancients have stolen all our best ideas. Verse 11, there is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. I mean, the reason we get so excited over something that's novel, it's because of our ignorance of history. We don't check the minutes of the last meeting. History's so repetitive. And this makes the promise of Jesus in Revelation 21, verse 5, so amazing and so appealing. For there he says, behold, I make all things new. The monotony of this life won't be broken. We won't escape fully the rut of life completely until Jesus returns to earth. But when he comes, he promises to make all things new. Verse 12, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. Solomon made it his quest to search out meaning. He viewed it as his duty. And here he states his conclusion. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed, all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Solomon was the wisest man on earth, yet in searching for fulfillment apart from God, he proved a fool. Under the sun, life is just soap bubbles. Verse 15, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. Listen to this verse in the Living Bible. What is wrong cannot be righted. It is water over the dam, and there is no use thinking of what might have been. He's saying every life is full of regrets. We're all victims of unrealized possibilities, of missed opportunities. It's frustrating. Solomon reflects on his own frustrations. He says, I communed with my heart saying, look, I have attained greatness and have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. And I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceived that this also is grasping for the wind. For in much wisdom is much grief. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. In other words, the more we learn, the more conscious we become of our ignorance. You know, the old proverb is true, a wise man is never happy. It reminds me of the father who bought his son the perfect Christmas present. He thought that this would teach the child a life lesson. It would prepare him for life. It was a puzzle whose pieces didn't fit. That no matter how you twisted the pieces, no matter how you assembled them, they didn't connect. You see, this is the problem with life. When you try to sort life out without God, nothing connects. Nothing makes sense. The pieces don't fit. As one person said, life goes on, I just forgot why. In chapter 2, Solomon searches for purpose in pleasure. He says, come now, I will test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure, but surely this also was vanity. Solomon became the Hebrew hedonist. For a time, he lived for pleasure alone. If it felt good, he did it. He grabbed for all the gusto. He enjoyed the high life. You've heard the Reebok tag, life is short, play hard. Well, Solomon played hard. The Bible tells us the old guy had 700 wives and 300 concubines. That means a different woman every night. Solomon's palace was like the Playboy mansion. It was a perpetual party. And then he adds, I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? Solomon tried entertainment. He indulged in comedy, he says. Laughter and mirth. He hired Leno and Letterman to do stand-up for him every night. He called me, but I was booked. I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their life. Solomon became a connoisseur of fine wines. And we're not talking the cheap stuff, man. This guy was rich. He knocked down $50,000 bottles like they were soft drinks. With Solomon's unlimited salary, his parties made the strip in Las Vegas look like a two-bit carnival. He partied hardy, but he found no peace in his pleasure. He found no satisfaction in his sensuality. He found no contentment in his cravings. And if ever there was a people that were trying to duplicate Solomon's pursuits, it would be 21st century America. For we too are a pleasure-crazed society. Food. We've got a network now, the food network. And wine. And sex, and entertainment, and resorts, and spas, and casinos, and holidays, and sports, and massages. And we spare no expense to try to fill the hollowness inside. And yet Solomon is saying when the party's over, there's still an aching emptiness. You see, here's an analysis. Here's a nutshell analysis of today's values. We live in a day when anything goes, but nothing lasts. Doesn't that sum it up? Anything goes, but nothing lasts. Boy, the same could be said for Solomon. You know, when the woman at the well came seeking water, Jesus told her, you'll thirst again. And we would do well to turn that phrase into a plaque and hang it over every source of modern day pleasure. Sex, you'll thirst again. Sports, you'll thirst again. Money, you'll thirst again. Fame, you'll thirst again. Drugs, you'll thirst again. You may get it, but it won't be enough. You'll thirst again. Jesus alone is the soul's thirst quencher. Nothing else can satisfy. Pleasure's fun for a time, but when the party is over, life is still vanity. You wake up with a hangover and in an empty house. And speaking of houses, here's another place where Solomon looked for satisfaction. In verse 4, he describes his crib for MTV. He says, I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I mean, he took up architecture and construction. He started working in the yard to try to find meaning. And yet it too was vanity. You know, 1 Kings chapter 7 tells us that Solomon spent 7 years building God's house, the temple. But he spent 13 years building his own house. His palace was unlike any other building in Jerusalem. Its gardens, its fountains, its porticos were spectacular. Solomon's palace was the ultimate dream house. And in verse 7, Solomon talks about his posse. You know, I'm sure the king thought that if he had enough people around him, waiting on him hand and foot, then surely he'd be happy. Verse 7, I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Some 30,000 servants catered to Solomon's every whim. He had publicists and personal chefs and masseuses and drivers and secretaries and trainers and money managers and event planners. You know, you can be around people, you can be surrounded by people and yet remain absolutely lonely if you lack a relationship with God. He says, yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. Man, I had cattle. That means he ate prime rib every night. Verse 8, I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. King Solomon was probably not just the richest man on earth at his time, but the richest man that has ever been, the richest man in history. He says, I acquired male and female singers and the delights of the sons of men and musical instruments of all kinds. Apparently, Solomon loved music, and so he tried to find meaning in music. He even kept a band around. You know, if life ever started getting boring, he'd just call in Dave Matthews, you know, to set up and play a little bit for him, or U2, or Taylor Swift, you know, depending on what kind of music he was into at the time. You know, he just loved music, and so he always had a band on hand, always had his little private concerts. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. He had no restraint. Solomon was so wealthy that his eyes were never bigger than his budget. This meant he had no boundaries. He said, I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. Neither money nor morality restrained him. This was the ultimate hedonist. If anyone could ever find meaning and purpose and satisfaction and happiness in the things of this world, it had to be Solomon because he had everything available to him. And yet, he says, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. Check this out. Pleasures, palaces, posses, prime rib dinners, Taylor Swift concerts. You would think this man would be happy. But now listen to his heartbreak. He says, then I looked on all the works that my hands had done and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed, all was vanity. And grasping for the wind, there was no profit under the sun. He said, life's a mess, man. I've had it all. I've been to the mountaintop, and I'm telling you, meaning and purpose in this life, satisfaction in this life is as elusive as trying to catch the wind in your hand and hold on to it. It's meaningless. Solomon says that living under the sun is like looking for meaning in all the wrong places, man. Sounds like the businessman who once confessed, he says, for years, I've been climbing a ladder of success that was leaning against the wrong wall. How frustrating is that? And yet this was Solomon's confession. Verse 12, then I turned myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who succeeds the king? Only what he has already done. Here Solomon is thinking of a legacy. You know, perhaps leaving a legacy is what life is all about. But what mark can a man make that really, you know, hasn't been made before? I mean, what mark on history can we really make that won't also be made by the predecessor? He says, then I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I myself perceive that the same event happens to them all. Solomon concedes that the wise man and the fool have more in common than we'd like to admit. Think about it. The rain waters the fool's yard, just like it waters the wise guy's yard. The tornado wipes out the house of the wise man, just like it wipes out the house of the fool. You know, we read the Proverbs, and we realize that there was a time when Solomon sought wisdom. But now he acknowledges that wisdom is not always an advantage, and it's frustrating to him. He says, so I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? Where did wisdom really get me? If the stock market crashes, everybody's portfolio tanks. All the analysis goes out the window. So what's the point of wisdom, he says. Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. Verse 16, for there is no more remembrance of the wise than of the fool forever, since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does a wise man die? As a fool. That should encourage you tonight. You're just going to die like the fool dies and you'll be forgotten. You know, You think you're important, you know, stick your finger in the glass of water and then pull it out real quick and see how long that takes for that hole to fill back in. That's about how long you'll be remembered, how long you'll be missed right there. Life is frustrating. Solomon valued wisdom, but on closer scrutiny, what difference is there in the long run between the foolish man and the wise man? Both men die. Both men end up forgotten. I mean, you work year after year. You earn a doctorate degree. You're really wise. But for what? I mean, 10 years after you die, maybe 10 months after you die, you're no more remembered than the high school graduate. Can you name the 25th president of the United States? I'll bet you at the time that was a really big deal, becoming president of the United States. You can't even remember his name. We don't even know his name. Can you remember who won the 1953 World Series? That was a big deal at the time. Or can you tell me who founded GM? Or who invented the ballpoint pen? Those are pretty significant developments. We live, we die, we're forgotten. That's us. Verse 17, therefore I hated life because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me, for all is vanity and grasping for the wind. I mean, we work and we work and we work, and at the end of the day, there are few, if any, lasting rewards. So what's the point? Why chase soap bubbles? Then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. I mean, here's another frustration. You work your whole life. You endure and you take risks and you navigate changes in the marketplace and you avoid disaster time after time. And you invest your blood and your sweat and your tears into building this business only to leave it to your kid who might just throw it all away in one act of foolishness. It's frustrating. What's with that? He says, therefore, I turned my heart and despised all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. I got to tell you, this is how I felt on Natalie's wedding day. It was so frustrating. Here I am. I had spent 21 years developing this wonderful young woman. Wasn't all me. Kathy had something to do with it. The Lord had a lot to do with it. But we had spent 21 years developing this beautiful, wonderful young woman. I cultivated with her this delightful friendship that meant so much to me. Only to have her grow up, move 2 hours away, and live with a guy I barely knew. And now I see her infrequently, and I got to tell you, that's the pits. If that's how life works, that's the pits. It's frustrating. Verse 21. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. And Solomon knew this firsthand. For you remember the story. He leaves his kingdom to a foolish son by the name of Rehoboam, who tears into the kingdom that Solomon had helped unify. Rehoboam acts foolishly. He listens to the snotty-nosed rich kids who don't know anything, but he listens to them. And in response to their counsel, he hikes the taxes in the land, and it causes the northern 10 tribes to rebel against Jerusalem and Judah in the south, and it splits the kingdom, and it stays that way for over 200 years. He says, for what has man for all his labor and for the striving of his heart with which he has toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrowful and his work burdensome. Even in the night, his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. Life is so frustrating. You spend your night, you spend your days working like a dog. But then you spend your nights, you're staying up late, you're planning and you're plotting and you're praying, you're trying to keep your business afloat, you're trying to raise your kids. You know, you stay up late a lot when you got teenagers at home. I mean, you stay up late a lot. And then they grow up, they leave you, they forget about you. You know, life goes on. Are you turn this business that you've built, you know, you turn it over to your spoiled brat kid who lacks the wisdom to sustain what you've started. Everything you've worked for gets squandered. This is life. Think of John Harvard. John Harvard was a dedicated Christian. John Harvard believed that his Bible was the Word of God. John Harvard donated his vast fortune to the university that now bears his name. He wanted to train men who would go out and propagate the Christian faith. And yet, sadly, today, Harvard University has become the bastion of humanism and liberal philosophy. I mean, John Harvard must be rolling over in his grave. Now, you would think that Solomon's frustrations with pleasure and with palaces and with posses and with prime rib dinners and with Taylor Swift concerts, you would think that his frustration with life under the sun would cause him to be an ascetic, that he would resort to a life of asceticism, of denial, that he would encourage us to renounce all pleasure, to minimize our possessions. But notice this, he takes the opposite approach. Verse 24, he says, nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. Remember the scope of Solomon's search. Under the sun, he says, there's nothing better. Just looking at life under the sun, there's nothing better than to eat and drink and enjoy your life.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.